Oh my goodness. Wonderful. Happy Mother's Day. And what a wonderful thing that we should be here on Mother's Day to enjoy this music. Nick and I were talking about Nick on the drums over there that we're on stage with. I really want you to get this. Three significantly important contributors to our entire movement's cultural and musical identity. Their combined musical contribution to our movement is staggering. These three people on stage, we should take a moment to acknowledge we were here today when they came together on our stage. It's a magnificent thing. Thank you for being here. Because I'll tell you something, music is the language that goes straight to our hearts, and it is more likely that we will remember the music than we will remember the message. And so I know my place, and so I'm going to up my game today. I will not be outshone. It's so lovely to have worked with you three for so long now, and I put on Facebook, do you know any of their songs? And the list of people whose lives have been touched by the music of these three artists is staggering. So they're coming back this afternoon. Yeah. Our topic today is a values-led life. It reminded me that when I was a spiritual coach and I would work with people on a one-on-one basis, one of the most common things that people would come to me for coaching about was relationships. How to attract the perfect right mate. That was on a lot of people's minds and still is today. So they would come and they would talk to me, and I would ask them a question that really was a trick question. I asked them, what do you value in a perfect relationship? And then they would list all the things that they needed the other person to have. And I would work with them on this list so we could really refine it, carefully identify those values so that we could rank them in order. We could get clear on these three qualities. Number one, which values were non-negotiable? Which were important but negotiable? And which were nice, would be nice. And then when we had that clear, I would give them some homework that would surprise some of them because it was the trick part. Let's say, for example, they came up with kindness and honesty and courage as their top three values, or maybe it was adventure, fun, passion. Whatever the top three values they came up with, I would ask them to take each one at a time, and write in a journal a short paragraph explaining how they expressed those values. So instead of praying for a partner with those values, you see, I turned it on them. I turned it back because I understood from what I had been taught in this movement that we are attractive to that which is alive in us. See, my values, when I live them, broadcast who I am, and that's attractive. So I was shifting their focus away from what the other people should have. You know, away from what the other person would bring into their lives, and focus instead on how they could embody those values that were, as they stated, important to them. So I would give them a 30-day prayer practice exercise. Day one, take that first value and prayerfully contemplate it. Do a spiritual mind treatment for themselves to embody and express it. Day two, do the second one in the same way. Day three, do the third one in the same way. Day four, start again. And keep on rotating so that their prayerful attention was placed on those values that they said were important to them. Because, as I told them, values are more about how I show up than they are about how you should show up. And when I'm clear on my values, they will guide me in how to interact with you. Now, this is valid, it's so for relationships, but also for everything, I think. Politics, investing, life, shopping, everything. So one day, one of the people I was working with, I'd been coaching him on spiritual values, identification, because he was interested in having a relationship. He came back to me with a report and a problem. Because he had done the 30-day exercise and he had met somebody. So he was thrilled. And he came to me and he said, "She is perfect. Except she isn't that strong on my top value." Now, I can't remember what the value was that he identified. Whatever it was, he had been focusing on it through his prayerful exercise in himself. So he was dialed into it, and he told me, "Look, so I took her on a date, and I brought it up, and I said to her, 'How do you feel about X?'" She was kind of lukewarm on it. It wasn't that important to her. And as he told the story to me, I could see he was struggling. You know, clearly, it felt to him like it was going to be a problem. And he wanted to find a way to move forward with this relationship, even though his values exercise were kind of screaming at him, caution, you know. He had put all this effort into identifying and embracing his values, and then love came along. What, was it going to just all go out the window? Was he going to throw it away? How is that going to work out, he was asking. So we took a breath and we talked. Because to me, I thought he was being a little bit hardline about it, you know. I mean, it's true that in life it's helpful to be transparent about values, you know. I will want to know what you value if we plan to raise a child together. I will want to know what you value if you're running for office and you're asking me to vote for you. I will want to know what you value if I'm about to go into business with you and invest with you, you know. And does that mean I only work with and I only hang out with people who share my exact values? Oh, that would be awesome. And it's unrealistic. It just doesn't match reality. And I think more realistically, spiritual living is about being in this world of diverse and shifting values with grace and understanding. And I think that becomes more possible when I get clear first on what are mine. So we talked about it. I talked about it with the guy. And I said to him, you know, this potential new relationship that you're exploring, now you can go into it being guided by your values, because your job now is to let those values serve as boundaries for you beyond which you will not go. Let them guide you how to show up in the relationship. You can still stay true to your values. For example, if your value is adventure, be adventurous. For us too, if your top value is kindness, be kind. If your top value is inclusivity, guess what? Include. And this can be applied beyond relationship everywhere in life. If I value peace, if I value mothers and the divine feminine, if I value life, if I value children, if I value freedom, if I value democracy, whatever it is, then let my life and my actions show it. Let me give my attention and stay true to my values so that they can guide me through this life so that I may live in an authentic way. My friend, Dr. Ken Gordon, he said something that stuck with me. He said, remember, you have absolutely nothing better to do than become yourself. So I have found that with enough really solid communication, sincere respect, it is possible to have friendships and partnerships and relationships and collaborations where different values can coexist as long as I am clear on what I will do and won't do, will be and won't be, will say and won't say. Values. Let them be a bright red line for me. You know, we have some classes and the beautiful brochure, the catalog that Jennifer held up, the Education 2024 catalog. If you page through it, you'll see there are classes that help with this values identification. There's one with Reverend Tara coming up, Wholeheartedly Me. It's in July. And then in August, there's one with me, Your Authentic and Innate Goodness, in which we do exercises to find out what I believe and how that's related to my values and where that comes from. And then in September with Peggy Weber, I think I saw Peggy, she's got a class, Who Am I All the Time? So you see, there's support for that, for you to discover your values. So what other ways are there that you and I can discover and know what our personal values are, whether we're talking about relationships or family or life or whatever it is? There are many ways to discover what you value. For example, take a look at how you spend your time and your attention. Take a look at how you spend your money and your resources. Take a look at who you admire and who you listen to. These will give you clues about what you value. In my book, Ordinary Goodness, which is about the spiritual values of kindness and compassion and courage, I describe an exercise that worked out very well for me to help identify my values. And it talks about how to discover what your values are by using your imagination and seeing yourself through other people's eyes. Yeah, I got to use your imagination for this. This is how it goes. So picture the scene. It's your memorial. There is somebody, and they're eulogizing you. They're speaking about you. What does the speaker say? Edward was a living example of, what do they say? That Edward, you could always count on him to what? Oh, Edward. It was clear by what he did in life that he valued what? What do they say? Because what they say, in a way, is describing the values that you demonstrated. Now, note, I didn't say what you said you valued. What you demonstrated, because they see us. Here's how I described it in the book, if you're having trouble answering it. If you are uncertain about how to complete these sentences, try asking close friends. Ask them how they would complete them for you. Living friends. What, in their opinion, are your values? How they respond may not match your own sense of your values, but it will give you an idea of how people experience you, and it may help you understand how the way you are showing up tells the world what you stand for. Now, if you've wandered off into your imagination in your mind with this exercise already, that's good. I understand. And perhaps you could complete it at home later on paper or with friends, you know, dig into it, because I've still got a lot more to share. Come back. So earlier I mentioned that where you spend your time and attention will tell you something about your values, and those values will shape your life, and they will determine how you become yourself that Dr. Ken was talking about. In the great Indian epic poem, the Ramayana, there is a hero, Rama, and there is a villain, Ravana. The thing is that they both have a tremendous amount in common. They're both well-educated, learned. They're both noble-born. They're both very wealthy and resourced. They're both very handsome. They both have tremendous courage and talent. But one is a god, and the other is a villain. So you might ask, how is that so? What makes the one a god and the other a demon? And I believe the answer is what they give their attention to. What their values are, that makes the difference. What is alive in them, that makes the difference. The filter through which they see the world, that makes the difference. The object of their gaze, that makes the difference. In the story, the one values control and the other values collaboration. The one values being served and the other one values service. The one values agreement and the other values compliance. And these are the differences that shape them, turning the one into a deity and the other into a villain. Wherever your attention is what is determining where you are going in life. Oh, yuck. A long time ago, I was sitting with a friend and I was complaining. Ooh, I was getting into it, you know. And at some point, he said, okay, I've heard enough. I said, what? See, I had let my attention land on the horribleness of the situation that I was talking about. And this attention fixation was leading me into a very dark place, and I was becoming a villain. Because according to me, I needed to unpack it with a friend. Because it had it in my mind that if I vented and complained and explained the bitterness, that I would substantially improve the situation. You know, there is some truth to that. Because I've done some life-changing, excellent talk therapy. And I do believe in the appropriateness of venting to a paid professional. And in that moment, my friend gave me a tremendous gift when he said, I've heard enough. Now, Edward, tell me, what is your highest thought about this situation? And I took that in. I got it. He was inviting me to notice where my attention had landed, where I was stuck, and he was inviting me to step back into my spiritual values. See, because where I was coming from at that particular time was so out of sync with my spiritual values. See, I said I wanted resolution, yet I was talking about how it couldn't possibly happen. I said I wanted clarity, yet I seemed to be focused on being right. I said I wanted peace, but I was making a case for war. I said I wanted love, but I seemed to be justifying how not being loving was okay. So when my friend said, what is your highest thought about the situation? I realized in that moment I had stepped out of becoming myself. Now look, he wasn't saying to me, suppress your anger, pretend it's not happening, stuff your feelings. You know, in fact, he had already invested a good hour and a half listening to me deeply and validating and empathizing. In that moment when he said that, I remembered the advice I had given to that man that I was working with about relationships. If you value kindness, be kind. If you value understanding, dwell on it. And so on. So I took a breath. And I said to myself, how does my conversation right now show me what I value in this moment? And how is the way that I'm showing up right now tell where my attention? I just had a conversation with myself, gently. Because, you know, life has got challenges, so many challenges. Oh, the list is endless. I try not to use the challenges of life as an excuse for bad behavior. I'm not always good at that. And the list of difficulties that life presents, from personal difficulties in relationships to health, to the economy, to the global issues of climate change and world hunger and terrorism and the war in the Middle East and in Europe and our own upcoming election, all these cry out for my attention. And as they do, I try to remind myself to respond to them with my body, mind, and soul firmly planted in my spiritual values. One of my favorite authors, Chris Ben-Gui, I think that's how you pronounce his name, he wrote this. What if happiness isn't supposed to be the goal, but rather the byproduct, the side effect of a life of worthwhile living? Oh, that phrase. A life of worthwhile living. It reminds me of our topic, a values-led life, because I believe that living in sync with my values leads to worthwhile living when I pay attention to them. Because sometimes I do want to tune my values out. You know, like when love shows up. Or like when the world is difficult. Or like when injustice is rampant. Or like when I value my own comfort over freedom and safety of other people. So it becomes helpful from time to time to check in with myself and ask, am I living in sync with my values? Now, if you ask yourself this question, you may discover that sometimes you haven't been. You haven't been living in sync with what is true and important to your heart. And if that is the case, you discover that try not to slip into harsh self-criticism. And if you do, try to at least interrupt it, put it on pause. Interrupt the cruel self-talk for a moment and then gently ask yourself, like my friend asked me, what is your highest thought about this? Where is your attention currently and where would you like it to be? Remind me, ask yourself, what it is you value in this situation and how that value can guide you. And when you do identify your value, you might ask, what would my value, whatever it is, have me say right here, or be right here, or do right here? Ask yourself how you would prefer to show up. And then give yourself permission to start over, fresh, again. And remember, you have nothing better to do than to become yourself.